heavily from the military and veterans as well. Like, leaked documents from Patriot Front show that more than 20% of their applicants are young veterans or people who are still in the military. You know, this is a real danger. You know, the Oath Keepers, you know, this after January 6th, it was revealed that so many of the participants were military veterans. In fact, many from the special operations were really the tactical leadership of that assault, and many of whom had stashed large numbers of assault rifles and ammunition in hotel rooms that were very near the Capitol assault. And so, of course, this is a something that should concern everyone. It's obviously, you know, the real clear and present danger when we're talking about extremism from within the military. But the Trump administration has indicated that the problem in the military is, in fact, wokeism. And they may, be going after woke generals and or things like that, which really means they will be going after trans people. But also, I think it's very concerning when we talk about what we should look forward to with the Trump administration, how they're going to combat extremism from the military. You know, one of Trump's main program platforms on his 20-point program for his presidency, one of them was deporting pro-Hamas terrorists. And so, of course, we know that the Trump administration, when they say pro-Hamas, they really just mean pro-Palestine. And, you know, this, I guess, brings me to the point that, you know, the military, as we've been discussing, really transforms people in a lot of ways. It can tend to transform people in extremely negative ways. But a lot of times people's military experience puts them in a positive direction and causes them to reject the violence that they were a part of, which is what we've been seeing the past year through the Gaza genocide, where large numbers of service members have been quitting the military, both publicly and privately, have been taking part in demonstrations to try to protest the U.S. role in it, and taking other really dramatic and heroic actions in that regard. And those are the kinds of people that Donald Trump and Hegseth and others who are going to be a part of the administration identify as extremists, when the real threat of right-wing extremism is going to go, of course, completely ignored, because, you know, that's really the base of the incoming administration.
Finally, Mike Preisner, a recent Guardian report headlined Trump pick a threat to U.S. military's counter-extremism effort. Experts warned, quote, Pete Hegseth, Donald Trump's embattled choice for Secretary of Defense, will struggle to handle the serious problem of extremism in the U.S. military due to his own far-right political views. Experts in the subject have warned. The piece quotes Christopher Goldsmith, an Iraq War veteran, CEO of the nonprofit watchdog Task Force Butler, saying, quote, I think it's going to be an absolute disaster. Pete Hegseth is a domestic extremist, he said. The Guardian goes on to note, quote, Hegseth, an Iraq and Afghan war veteran, was barred from attending Joe Biden's 2021 inauguration after a fellow National Guardsman accused him of being an insider threat and an extremist with problematic tattoos. Mike Preisner, your final comments.
Yeah, well, we are in a tumultuous time in America, both a time of heightened political violence and at a time of growing despair and growing inequality in this country. You know, the military, being a cross-section of that U.S. society, experiences those things as well. And in that moment, there are going to be numbers of people in the military and veterans who are going to gravitate towards right-wing organizations and go the path that Hegseth went. There's going to be people who do the opposite, and there's going to be people that just turn inward into self-destruction and despair. And so that's why I think it's very important for progressive-minded people, to realize that there is a role we can play in reaching out to people who are in the military, who can go down a different path and can go down the path of the many heroic service members who have taken a stand, who have quit the military, and who have used their experiences as a force for good in this world. And, you know, getting back to this main issue of that we have these deep-rooted problems in our society that give rise to these incidents of mass violence, service members and veterans, you know, instead of being a number one mass casualty offender, so many of them can actually be a part of changing society and getting to the root of those issues and moving society forward, as they have historically in the past. Vietnam veterans leading the struggle against the Vietnam War, Iraq veterans leading the struggle against the Iraq War, and in both those incidents being decisive factors in those wars coming to an end. We have much bigger problems to address in society. service members can be, and veterans can very much be a part of solving them. And it's very much needed that we foster that among progressive people, because there is clearly a faction on the right wing that is very much already doing that and taking advantage of that. And of course, is entering the highest seats of power with people like Hegseth.
Mike Prajzner, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Mike was an Iraq War Army veteran, longtime OGI organizer, previously co-founded March Forward, an anti-war group of veterans and active service members. He was 17 when he joined the military in 2001. His company participated in the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, three films directed by Palestinians are shortlisted for the Academy Awards. We'll look at one of them, From Ground Zero. Stay with us. But wait a minute, Saddam Hussein prays the same. And this is Asia from where I came. I'm on the wrong side, so change the target. Shooting at the general, and where's the sergeant? Blame it on John Hody Hawkins for bringing me to America. Now it's mass hysteria. I get a buzz when I see blood, dead bodies on the floor. Casualties of war. Casualties of war. Casualties of war. Casualties of war. Now at least, just because they lost, it don't mean it's peace. It's a long way home, it's a lot to think about. Whole generation left in doubt. Innocent families killed in the mist. It'll be more dead people after this. So I'm glad to be alive and walking. Half of my patrol came home in coffin. Except the general buried in the storm. And bits and pieces, no need to look for. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. That was Casualties of War by Eric B. and Rakim. We turn now to Gaza, where Israel continues to intensify its attacks, killing at least 35 Palestinians since dawn. Authorities report more than 70 killings over the last 24 hours, including in al-Mawasi, a region that Israel designated a so-called humanitarian safe zone. As Israel's relentless war on Gaza enters its 15th month, we turn now to a film that's been shortlisted for this year's Oscars, From Ground Zero, a collection of 22 short films made in Gaza by Palestinian filmmakers surviving Israel's bombings. This is the film's trailer.
Isn't this tragic?
As you can see, we're picking up flour and sand. That's all we have left to do. We pick up whatever we find in the ground. We have to eat.
22 extraordinary stories.
There are always drones making a buzzing sound. They are always above our heads when we sleep, study, dance.
From 22 Palestinian filmmakers.
Mom wrote on my arm, if they bomb us and kill us, we'll be identified from our names written on our bodies.
Living through war.
I was targeted three times in 24 hours. The first time, my cousin and I were returning from Camp 5. They attacked the house and we were buried in the wreckage.
Musab, who's next to you? Khalid, is he dead?
Yes.
Believe me, my friend, I had a beautiful life in a beautiful city.
We want to laugh, rejoice, sing, and express our emotions. Yes, there are bombings and destruction and many other things that take us back to zero. But that only increases our challenge to overcome.
Today, I want to tell you a story. Are you ready?
Our greatest loss was not being able to see the film in front of the audience on the big screen.
No to injustice, no to violence, no to the violation of human rights. No to everything that goes against humanity, joy, life. No to everything that destroys our hopes.
That's the trailer for From Ground Zero, which has been shortlisted for the 2025 Oscars, along with two other Palestinian films, No Other Land and An Orange from Jaffa. The film is being released nationwide in the United States today. It made news recently when the acclaimed documentary filmmaker Michael Moore, Oscar-winning filmmaker Michael Moore, joined as executive producer. We go now to France, where we're joined by Rachid Mashrawi, renowned Palestinian filmmaker originally from Gaza, who curated and directed From Ground Zero. This is an astounding collection, Rachid. I spent the night watching it and then watching it again. It is so deeply moving. Explain, not often do you see a director called the curator. Explain what you did.
Usually as a film director from Gaza, usually I am doing my own film. But this time for me, the situation was different. The images was different. The size of the massacre, the killing, we never witnessed something like this. So then I decided, okay, my coming film or my next film will be made by filmmakers from Gaza, just to give the chance to 22 filmmakers to tell their own stories, their own daily life, to get closer to the details, because I believe these people must share their own stories with the world. At the same time, you know, we are filmmakers. We are trying to make cinema, to deal with art, with culture, in spite of all what happened. We were trying to search for hope. Yes.
I want to go to another clip. We played the trailer, but this is a clip of the short film Sorry Cinema, featured in From Ground Zero, where the director Ahmed Hassouna is fleeing for his life after an Israeli strike near his home in Gaza.
Now my life has become a different kind of marathon. Now I am running to save my family's lives, my own life. I run, hoping to find food and drink for my children, who flee the bombings from one house to another.
Ahmad, are you okay? Where are you? Get out of there. Are you okay? Come.
I struggle to endure the things I see and hear. Everything that is happening to us, everything we are going through. I have just lost my older brother in a random bombing next to his house. What? The whole tower collapsed. At that moment, I felt death catching up with us. Our only chance of survival was luck. Our only chance of escaping the rubble, the bombing houses, the ruins of the city. Nowhere in Gaza is safe, especially in the north, where I currently live. Here, no humanitarian aid, nor rescue, nor civil protection arrives. All that comes are bombs, fear, stress, and insecurity.
Talk about Ahmed Hassouna's story, Rachid.
Yes, Ahmed, he was known in Gaza before the war that he's a cinephile. He's all his life spent after watching film, searching about films, trying to make films in Gaza, from Gaza. And all the time he was looking for an opportunity to make his new film. During the war, I contacted Ahmed and I told him, join me in my project From Ground Zero. Be one of these filmmakers. This is your chance because I'm going to show these films internationally and worldwide. And immediately he said, no, I don't want to make a film, Rachid. He said, I am trying to save my family. I am searching for wood to make a fire, to cook for the family. We are moving every day from one place to another. And just a few days ago, I lost my older brother. So I don't want to make a film. Sorry for you. Sorry for the cinema, Rachid. And I was shocked from his answer because I know his love to cinema. And then 2-3 weeks later, I get back to him and I say, Ahmed, let's make what you told me in our conversation. Let's make a film about a filmmaker from Gaza. He have no time to make cinema because he's trying to save his life. Show us something from your previous films. show us your daily life and show us how you are going to make it to say sorry for the cinema. And then we agree and we come with this film, the one that everybody watching now, Sorry Cinema. I think people must know, beside all these people whose martyrs we talk about, it's been more than 50,000 now. Most of them are innocent. Most of them are people who are really searching for life. People like Ahmed Hassouna, he wants to be a filmmaker. And from ground zero, we have many people who want to be a painter, want to be stand-up comedy. They want to be a dancers. I mean, people like any other people in the world trying to manage their own dreams. And I was interested in these people to tell the stories, the normal stories, the real life under all this massacre and genocide.
You were born and raised in Gaza, Rashid Mashrawi. Through the making of this film, you also witnessed the destruction of your home, your reflections as you tried to encourage these filmmakers. They'd be in the middle of a film, they'd lose a family member, they'd lose many members of their family, talking to you about not being able to go on.
Yeah. Yes, it means for me it was logical and normal that I will be involved in from ground zero. As a Gazaian, all my family are in Gaza now, and as you say, we lost many people from my family, and we lost our houses. I lost all the neighborhood where all my memory, my school, my childhood games, friends for sure, neighbors for sure, and many things. But still, you know, I'm someone known as, I always optimistic, I'm always adding hope. I believe in cinema, in art. I trust cinema, you know, because I think cinema should play the role that it's playing in from ground zero. Cinema for justice, you know, cinema for humanity. Cinema just to remind the world all the time, we are all humans. We are the same. We have the same dreams. Many people was killed because they were in Gaza at this location, at this time, and they have nothing to do with what's going on. Women and kids and old people. Okay, we know what happened in 7 October. We know when Hamas get out and they attack and they hostage people and they kill people and they arrest people. Me, myself, I know also many, many massacres that the Israelis did before 7 October. This struggle, it started more than 77 years ago, before 1948. And we have, as Palestinians, we have to keep telling our stories. We have to fight to make good cinema also and to share all these stories with the world. I am very happy that these films are now crossing the U.S., showing in many cinemas, and I will be very happy when many people just go and watch, because it's not news, it's not a reportage, it has something else. It has nothing to do with politics even. It has something to do with our world that we are all sharing. We are looking for justice.
Rashid Mashrawi, yes, the film is opening today in cinemas across the country. It's also gotten headlines because the award-winning filmmaker, Oscar-winning filmmaker Michael Moore, has joined you as executive producer. Now, he won the Palme d'Or for the documentary film Fahrenheit 9/11, becoming the first and only documentary to win there. Your film was accepted at Cannes, where he won the Palme d'Or, but then rejected? And what did you do?
I think our films were from the beginning rejected. I mean, we never was accepted in Cannes. We were in discussing with Cannes to try to show even not all from ground zero, some films from ground zero, because I was coming with to Cannes with films and filmmakers, you know? And I think they don't want to deal with us. Even they say it in the press conference of Cannes before the festival. They don't want to deal with the tension, with the political, with all what's happening in the area. It was only Gaza. It was only Palestine. I mean, I remember 2 years before when the president of Ukraine was having space in the opening of Cannes making speech.
Right. That was President Zelensky.
Yes, it was also to deal with the war and to deal with politics. You know, I feel sorry for Cannes Film Festival because I consider Cannes Film Festival, it's an important festival, good festival, big festival. It should make his job. It should play his role to give space, to give stage to filmmakers and to cinema and to protect humanity through cinema, through art, through filmmakers. And they didn't. I think they lost the opportunity to be. It means they were there and we were also there. So I say then, if Cannes don't want to go to Gaza, Gaza will go to Cannes. So I take my team, I build our tents in Cannes, like the tents in Rafah, exactly. We have our own screenings, our own sound, our own audience, and we make our own films. We make the people from Gaza to speak, the filmmakers, to speak inside Cannes with the audience. And we bring Gaza to Cannes during the festival. But officially, we were not in Cannes.
Rashid, we just have a minute. So to clarify, it wasn't originally except at Cannes. But it is premiering here in the United States across the country. You partnered with Watermelon Pictures, the first distribution company for Palestinian films in the U.S. We have 30 seconds. The significance of this collaboration.
I am really, really proud, you know, with what they are doing, Watermelon. I feel that I already won the Oscar because my aim is to show these films to maximum people. And this is what Watermelon is doing. They are showing these films everywhere. And also the input, what Michael Moore bring to this these films, it's really to join us and to share the stories with many, many, many people. I just can appreciate and thank with all, from all my heart for all these people who participate and help and support from Ground Zero.
Rashid Masharawi, I want to thank you for being with us, renowned Palestinian filmmaker from Gaza. He curated the Oscar shortlisted From Ground Zero, being released in theaters nationwide in the United States today. Next up, an update on the impact of the bombing of Yemen. Stay with us.
And now it's the winner. Seems like winter in America. Time for the all of the healer. Done been killed. Or been betrayed. Say, people know it's something wrong with everybody. All of the winner. Seems like a winter in America. America, the Constitution.
Winter America by Gil Scott-Heron, Brian Jackson, and the Midnight Band. Soul of the Midnight Band and former Black Panther Bilal Sunni Ali passed away December 30th. It was said when he played his horn, he put fear in the oppressor and brought hope to the oppressed. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show in Yemen as the Pentagon launched a wave of airstrikes on Sana'a and other parts of Yemen this week. U.S. Central Command said it targeted Houthi command and weapons production facilities. The attacks came just after Israel bombed the Yemeni port city of Hodeidah and the main airport in Sana'a, killing at least six people. For more, we're joined by Shireen Al-Adimi, the Yemeni-American assistant professor at Michigan State University and a non-resident fellow at Quincy Institute. Professor, welcome back to Democracy Now! As we just have a few minutes, if you can talk about the significance of the U.S. attacks and the Israeli attacks, one on the airport in Sana'a, as the head of the World Health Organization, Ghebreyesus, was getting on the plane.
Yeah, so as we know that the U.S. formed Operation Prosperity Guardian essentially to protect commercial ships and other vessels going through the Red Sea that the Houthis, also, of course, they're known as Ansarullah, have been rerouting in support of the Palestinians, given the genocide that's occurring in Gaza. And so the U.S. has moved their carriers, USS Truman and others, to the Red Sea and have been, you know, launching airstrikes, what they're calling Houthi targets, which honestly, it's just a phrase that justifies and legitimizes the bombings. These are targets that are largely on civilian targets. You mentioned Sana'a International Airport, which is the only operating airport in northern Yemen, and the port city of Hodeidah, which, of course, is the lifeline of Yemen, which is still reeling from a decade of the U.S.-Saudi-UAE campaign, the war of aggression over the last 10 years. And then most recently, Israel has joined by striking these sites directly. And so these are strikes on Yemeni infrastructure. These are strikes on Yemeni civilians. They're aimed at deterring Ansarullah's capabilities because they have been supporting the Palestinians. But as we know, that the only thing that will stop Ansarullah from rerouting ships in the Red Sea and stopping their attacks, their drone and missile attacks in Israel, is an end to the genocide in Gaza and an end to the starvation of the Palestinian people.
If you could explain, as I mentioned, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus was just meters away from the blast when the Israeli bomb dropped at the airport. What was he doing in Yemen, Professor Adimi?
So he was in Yemen as part of a mission to try to release some World Health Organization employees who have been held by Ansarullah. And he said that the negotiations have been going very well, that they reached agreements on four major points. So that was the mission. And of course, this is public knowledge where the World Health Organization goes. You know, this is a civilian airport. And it was known, he himself says that he assumes that whoever needed to know where he was, that he was there in that location at that particular time, would have known. So it is not a coincidence that Israel targeted the airport while he was there, just meters away. As you mentioned, he still says that he suffers from tinnitus from the blast. There were six people who were killed, 40 Yemenis who were injured. So this is a really significant development that, honestly, I'm pretty shocked that it's not more widely known and reported on. It just seemed to have disappeared in the news. The targeting of the World Health Organization's general secretary general, essentially, and I would say targeting is the appropriate word, because, like I said, they would have known that he was there at the time. So I think it sends a message to the World Health Organization to, you know, maybe they don't know why he was there, but Israel can apparently do no wrong. So this is not surprising that they've gotten away with doing what they've done in Palestine and Yemen, bombing their neighbors across the Middle East. And yet, you know, they're given the green light to commit these atrocities and to target whomever they want, to target Yemeni infrastructure, to target an airport that only functions really to Amman and back, a couple of flights each week, and all because they want to continue doing what they're doing in Palestine with no consequences.
Professor, President Trump is about to become president again in just over 2 weeks. Do you expect U.S. policy towards Yemen to change?
I don't, because for the past 22 years, a U.S. president has been bombing Yemen, starting with the Bush administration, continuing on with Obama, who expanded the drone campaign and then launched the, you know, full support for the Saudi-led coalition in Yemen from 2015 to the end of his presidency. Then we had Trump, who just continued selling weapons to the Saudis and supporting their war every step of the way. Then President Biden said that he would end the war in Yemen, but really just continued supporting them, but just under a rebranding, essentially, as a defensive rather than an offensive war. And now Biden is directly bombing Yemen. And so I don't expect U.S. policy in Yemen to change. I expect Yemenis to continue doing what they can to defend themselves. But unfortunately, we've seen over the last 22 years that the U.S. will continue to break its own laws. It's unconstitutional to attack another country without congressional approval. And honestly, what is Congress doing while all of these presidents
have
attacking? So unfortunately, I don't expect policy to change, but this should not be accepted. This should not be normalized. And we as citizens should be doing everything we can to stop it.
We have to leave it there. Professor Shireen Aladimi, thank you so much for joining us. A happy birthday to Dennis McCormick and Clara Ibarra. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Quelle est l'importance de cette station pour vous? Une station locale, des nouvelles et des informations qui comptent. Vous ne trouverez rien de tel ailleurs. Maintenant, nous avons besoin de vous, de votre voix, pour soutenir l'initiative des radios communautaires. La radio a été là pour vous dans des moments importants, et maintenant, c'est à votre tour. Vous pouvez vous joindre à la lutte pour l'avenir de la radio communautaire sur monirc.ca. Encore monirc.ca, des voix locales qui façonnent notre communauté.